thank you for joining us. It is just after 9 o'clock now on Thursday morning, and we typically reserve this hour. I mean, sometimes we'll have an exception, but typically between 9 and 10 is just an open line segment where we can open up the text line, open up the phone line for you. It's the same number, by the way, 1-877-332-8255. If you have something you want to talk about, now's the time to do it. There's lots of different things going on. We started off the show. We had Sylvain Charlebois on just after 8:30, and we were talking about a variety of things involving food and food prices. I saw his tweet where he actually showed a steak that he bought at the store that was from Australia, and it was cheaper than buying a Canadian cut of beef. Head scratching. How can that happen? He talked about, he worries. There's a couple of things. He said, number one, he worries that Australia is dumping beef. That's something that he's asked the federal government to look into. But number two, is there gouging going on? And he says, by virtue of the fact that you've got two pieces of beef in a cooler, one from Australia and one from Canada, and the Australian one isn't jacked up, his sights aren't set on the grocery stores. His sights are set on meat packers. And he said there's a couple of main meat packers in Canada. Now, what this has done is it's set off a bit of a chain reaction on the text line. Lots of people texting in. Number one, talking about what they've seen at the grocery stores. And I got a text from David in Saskatoon that said, I actually noticed frozen pork ribs at Save On Foods from Germany. So it's not just beef where we've got products coming in from other countries. But then we also are having a number of people, and as a farm kid, I can tell you this makes sense to me. Buying a quarter of beef from a farmer and getting a local butcher to cut and wrap it for you. I got a text from Ron, actually, in Saskatoon. He said, I just bought a quarter of beef, came out to $7.25 a pound, cut and wrapped the way I want it, delivered to my door, all the way, by the way, from Fox Valley, Saskatchewan. So Ron lives in Saskatoon. He used Cattle Boss Butchers in Fox Valley, so he's given them a shout-out. A lot of people suggesting that's the way to buy beef, but man, it is expensive. We were just noticing it. I mean, we shop at a couple of different stores. We tend to go to the co-op a lot when we shop, convenient, close to our house, but it's a challenge, not just in Saskatchewan. I mean, we're hearing this Canada-wide. Beef seems to be expensive right now. So if you want to talk about that, text line is open. The other story, there's a couple of other stories that we're following, but one that I brought up with Sylvain is I actually cannot believe, and I know there's some people that think I'm way out in left field on this one, but I cannot believe how this ostrich story continues to thrive the way it does. So this is the farm in BC, Universal Ostrich Farms. Now, they used to raise ostrich on the farm for food purposes. They have since converted to basically raising ostriches for science purposes. So they do some sort of different scientific experiments. They're used for scientific purposes, understanding how they process different strains of flu and how vaccines impact and all of those types of things. Nonetheless, there was a complaint that came in late last year, and it was an anonymous complaint, which is partly where I think this starts, is it started a bit of a fight in this small community. But an anonymous complaint came in that there were a number of dead birds on this ostrich farm. A number of them. So the Canadian Food Inspection Agency comes in, and they do a check, and sure enough, there are a number of ostrich that have died on this farm. So this triggers an inspection and led to the discovery of HSN1, otherwise known as the avian flu, in the flock of ostrich. So there's still, I think, somewhere around 350 birds left at Universal Ostrich Farms. And the CFIA, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, has a policy. This is consistent with other policies that they've enacted with chickens, with cattle, that there's a need for a culling of the herd. Basically, they have to destroy the animals to prevent the spread of the flu. This is taking place late last year. Since then, this has taken on a life of its own. It's caused, and I said this, it's caused a real fraction in the community. I mean, we are getting businesses targeted. If the people that come into town from the CFIA sit in a restaurant to eat lunch while they're there conducting their investigation, that restaurant is targeted. Everything from mischief and damage to negative reviews online. There is bullying happening in the town. There's a number of things. And protesters now are coming from all over. They are lining the outside. They are strapping themselves to the gates of the ostrich pen to prevent authorities from going in. The RCMP have been called in. So, I mean, there's so many things here. What a lot of the people that are in support of the ostrich are saying is test them now. Test them now because many of them no longer carry the strain of the, they'll test negative for the avian flu. What we hear from the CFIA is, yes, we can go in and retest, but allowing domestic poultry known to be exposed to the avian flu to remain alive still means a potential source of the virus persists in the bird. So they could still test negative and still be a threat. And this is a big threat. If you think about the poultry business in Canada is $1 billion business, billions of dollars. And so if this was a chicken ranch and we had to cull 200 chickens, would there be billionaires from the States offering to fly them down to the States to protect them? Would there be politicians joining the protest? And by the way, this protest, if you're on the side of save the ostrich, okay, fair enough, free world. I still am scratching my head. I don't get it. But if you are on that side, how about the guy dressed with a balaclava on his head who is dousing the house of a 72-year-old woman that lives near the farm? She's a neighbor to the farm because it was suspected that she was one of the anonymous people that complained about the farm, although she has denied that. And then when she comes out, 72-year-old woman, lives by herself, she comes out to confront the masked protester, because this guy who was arrested was linked to the protest group. He douses her with gasoline. Before he can light her on fire, she grabs him, bites his arm, kicks him in the groin, and he punches her in the face. I don't know if you've seen her, but I mean, she's got black and blue. She's got a bruised cheek, bruised eye, bruised head. So what do you say about that? Protesters. And it is ridiculous to me that it's gotten to this point. But maybe I'm out in left field. Maybe the surge to save the ostrich is the cause of 2025. I don't know. But I also know, and I've said this before, talking with people who are in the food, agriculture food industry. So people that raise, whether it's cattle, pork, poultry, whatever. They say there's a lot of things that you got to keep in mind when there's some sort of strain of disease that goes through, like the avian flu. And one of them is you don't want to congregate a lot of people around the animals because it's contagious and you want to try and contain the threat. No, let's flock. Let's flock to the property. Let's have hundreds of people there. Let's force security officials to have to stand on guard. I mean, we've got fires being started. We've got mischiefs being happening. We've got assaults happening in the community. 1-877-332-8255. What do you think? The other thing that I wanted to talk about today, and we're going to take a break here right away and come back and go right to the phone lines and the text lines. But Danielle Smith came out yesterday saying, we want a pipeline and we're going to actually pay to start this ball rolling. Danielle Smith making that announcement yesterday. She was very proud of the announcement. You could tell in the news release that they did. They held a news conference and she made the announcement that they were going to sink $14 million into this. Just another example of a provincial premier taking the bull by the horns and trying to make something happen. So we'll talk about that as well when we come back. It's Open Lines here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Times bring
me down. Let me bestow this Western blessing and share what I have found. May you always have cows around.
I'm a farm kid, and I'm unapologetic about loving beef. I'll tell you, I mean, a good steak in the summer. I love hamburger. I mean, cuts of a roast beef, you name it. We grew up. We were lucky. I'm going to consider myself fortunate. Growing up on a farm, we had cattle, beef cattle, and so we always had a freezer full of great wrapped brown packages. And Mom would, most especially on the weekend, send us downstairs, go grab something for supper. Many times she'd say, you pick what you want, and then she makes the meal around it. But yeah, we had lots of great food. So lots of people texting in about the importance of the beef industry here, which is absolutely right. And lots of people pointing out that Australian beef actually has been cheaper consistently through the years than Canadian beef, but there's no comparison in the quality. And I would 100% agree with that. Canadian beef is as good as it gets. There's no question about that. It just seems like the disparity in the price is shocking the way it is right now. In fact, let's go to the phone line on this exact topic. I'm going to grab the call from Jay first. Hey, Jay, thanks for calling in. Beef, what do you got for me?
It's actually Gene.
Oh, sorry, Gene. Sorry about that. I misheard.
No problem. I've been in the meat business for 45 years, and Australian beef has always been cheaper than Canadian. Not maybe as much as it is now, but certainly cheaper. It's grass-fed. It doesn't marble like Canadian beef, and therefore it's usually used in the discount steakhouses. If you used to remember Bonanza or Ponderosa, that's the product that they would use.
Is that right? Okay.
Canadian, as opposed to Canadian beef. Or a good steakhouse in Canada that will serve Canadian beef, obviously.
Right.
And it's well marbled, and it's just more flavorful. So it's unfortunate that Charlebois wanted to make a big kind of a sensational story about Canadian beef being more expensive than Australia. It always has been, and it's because it's a different grade, a different quality altogether.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Jay, and thank. I mean, you've got, like you say, 45 years in the business, or sorry, Gene, 45 years in the business. Obviously, you've got experience with it, and lots of people saying, you know, this isn't necessarily new. What seems to be new is maybe the difference in the price, the disparity between the two. And I think that's what Sylvain was trying to point out in his post that he put online, is the Australian beef might be a lesser quality, but it's beef prices. And we've been hearing this from people on the show over the last little while talking about it. I would agree there is no substitution for Canadian beef. Proud of that. That's a proud part, and especially here in the prairies, something that we are very proud of. Okay, I know I stirred up a few people, and I'm looking at some of the texts online with my rant about the ostrich farm. Hey, listen, I'm open for discussion here. I'd like to hear anyone's point of view on this. In fact, I'll go to Terry in Saskatoon to start us off.
Good morning, Evan. How are you?
I'm good, Terry. I have never said the word ostrich so much in the last 2 weeks. I don't know what is going on, but this has really taken on a bit of a life of its own, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? I guess, you know, my concern is, and, you know, I'm not going to profess to be a scientist or anything of the sort. My question is have those current birds been tested for any kind of avian flu? If not, what business does the CFIA or anybody have in culling those birds is my question. Once that question's answered, I think the rest is pretty much self-explanatory. If we don't see the government overreach, furthermore, you know, you talk about, you know, the stuff that happens around these protests and whatnot. Well, they're going to happen regardless of the cause. We reached a point in this country where we got to figure out what direction we want to go. The RCMP have no business there. There's no laws being broken. There's no none of that happening. So unless those birds are tested, what is the CFIA doing there? That's all we got to ask. This is a slippery slope that we're going down, and people better start waking up. They're starting with this, and what's next? They're already coming after your gas-powered vehicles. They're coming after people's guns. People got to start using a little bit of more critical thinking skills and figure out which way they want to go.
Terry, I appreciate what you're saying there, and you're right. I mean, you'll get me on board with the gas-powered vehicles. You'll certainly get me on board with the gun thing. We've talked about that on the show. Here's what I know about the testing of the birds. The testing happened shortly after the complaint came into the CFIA. So that was at the end of last year. The complaint came in. There were a number of dead birds on this ostrich farm. They do the testing and they find strains of the avian flu is present in the herd, and they order the culling of the herd. Since then, I don't know that there's been more testing, and what you just said, Terry, is what some people are calling for. Let's do more testing. What we hear from the CFIA is we can test, and the test could show that the majority of them are negative, or maybe even all of them are. But the reality is, once a domestic poultry flock has been known to exposed to this virus, it basically remains alive that they could be a potential source for the virus to be transmitted. So the culling was ordered, and it's been held at bay. It didn't happen right away because of the protests, because of the court challenges, because of everything that's gone and precipitated since then. And as for the RCMP being there, I mean, they're there. No different than how many times when I was with the Regina police, did we show up at an event that really, it wasn't that criminal things were happening. It was that there was high emotions and they were there. They're there to keep the peace. Some could argue having the police there escalates it, but at the end of the day, they're there. CFI representatives are on scene and there's demonstrators yelling. And I just told the story about the assault that happened on the 72-year-old woman. So that's what they are doing there. Now, I did see a message here. I might have to try and decipher through. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Evan, come on. No one is condoning violence with this protest. This man is a sick human being. The comment you made calling out the protesters isn't right. I'm pretty sure they're appalled as well. By the way, first time texting your show. Thanks for the great topics. I like that. You know, you give me a little bit of a slap. Come on, Evan, wake up, but keep up the good work. I like it. And I get it. I mean, when you have a protest, you do get these wing nuts who are just there to capitalize on the protest, and they take it too far. They can give the protest a bad name. I just am shocked that it's gone this far to begin with. 1-877-332-8255. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. We'll take another break. We'll come back. More of your thoughts and more of whatever you would like to talk about here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Evan Bray, on a Thursday morning, open lines, where we're going down a tangent on the ostrich farm situation from BC, which is it's great. We've got lots that we can talk about here. So on the text line, there's a lot of people pointing out a couple of things. Number one, I drew a comparison. I said, would you have people protesting if this was a chicken farm and there were 300 chickens that had to be destroyed? We have a texter, and I probably lost it now, but someone pointing out, look, there's a big difference between the value of an ostrich and the value of a chicken. So that's a big part of why the farmer or the people that are running this ostrich farm are protesting. This is a big hit to their bottom line. I completely get that. I can't imagine. I said I grew up on a cattle farm. I can't imagine if you had a cow or a couple of cattle that tested positive for mad cow, whatever, and there was an order for your herd to be culled. Now, it brings up the discussion, is there such thing as insurance for these birds? I think it was Jeff and Estevan that said, don't they have insurance? Yeah, there's a big cost and there's some tragedy that you've got to kill animals, but they must have insurance for these birds as well. A lot of people saying, not with you on this one, Evan. Don't agree with you. This is completely different. People saying that what these birds are used for is science purposes. And there has been suggestion that they've reached what they're calling herd immunity. meaning that the ostrich that are left that didn't die as a result of the avian flu are testing negative and are healthy. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency is suggesting that if you have been exposed to the virus, there's a chance you could carry and transmit it without testing positive. So many people are saying this is government overreach for the CFIA. Others saying the only reason it's gone this far is because it's been dragged out through the courts. That cull should have happened immediately. So we got a lot of different perspectives on this, which is, it's great. Love to hear it. 1-877-332-8255. We also have been talking about beef prices, and I'm going to grab the call from Bonnie in Wadena here. Have you noticed grocery shopping, Bonnie, the price of beef has gone up recently?
Oh, certainly. It's unaffordable almost. Carney, Trudeau, and the Green team, they're just trying to discourage us from eating beef because of the methane gas issue. And food prices. Yesterday in Parliament, they had a vote on food taxation. And they've realized that food prices are up 40% since the Liberals took power. And food bank use is up 142%. They expect 4 million visits to the Daily Food Bank this year.
Pretty daunting stats. I saw the news conference that Pierre Poilievre held the other day on food prices. So, Bonnie, thanks for calling in and bringing that up. Okay, let's go to Shirley. She's been waiting patiently. Shirley, you spotted something at your local post office that you weren't expecting to see. What is that?
On Monday, I was in my local post office to pick up what mail had been delivered since they went out on strike. And my goodness, the lights were on in the post office, and I looked through the glass door, and there was two people and somebody behind the counter working.
Really?
Yes.
Did you go in and talk to them or no?
You know, I didn't because the postmistress was busy waiting on these customers, and so I was in a bit of a hurry, so I didn't. And I since have Googled and found out somebody had mentioned maybe they belong to separate unions, but according to Google, they workers inside the buildings as well as the mail carriers, they all belong to the same union.
Mm-hmm.
So why are they spending the money to pay these employees when there's no mail delivery? What are they doing?
It's it's a good question, Shirley. There are a few different unions actually that are made up of all of the employees in the Postal Service, and I've had some interaction with listeners on that. These are the types of questions that someone out there can answer, because there's someone who works at the post office or maybe works in a post office in a small community that could provide us with some details as to why you might see workers in some post offices in the province while they picket in others. 1-877-332-8255. Back to the ostrich talk. Let's go to Paul in Regina. What do you got for me, Paul?
What do I got? From what I've been following on this story, I've been following it for months and months, and I'm watching all the live feeds from the area.
Yeah,
I want to know, do you know Dave Bielinski?
I don't.
He's a 50% owner of the business partner of the family farm.
Okay.
He brought those ostriches in, purchased out of Africa, specially genetic types of ostriches in Africa. He brought them over. The mother of the family owns 50%. Of the operation too. No one's talking about in the media that what they were working on at this specific time was avian flu antibodies. Now you answer me the question: why did they see? Has the CFIA confiscated all their research that was in the basement of their house and took everything away?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Paul.
Why are they taking away all the eggs? And someone answer me the question, and I've watched podcasts, both of Dave Bielinski talking about it and the mother. Earlier this year, the CFIA agent that was dealing with the family farm gave the mother an exemption status of the ostriches. So suddenly, suspiciously, a week after they received that exemption order, they revoked it.
So you're saying, can I just ask Paul? Paul, just hang on, Paul. Yeah. Paul, I just want to clarify. So you're saying that they said an exemption order, meaning the ostriches were fine to stay alive,
were exempt. They gave a the caseworker, and she's on a podcast. I have it on my phone with two other ladies, and I don't remember the podcast. And she stated they gave us at the time an exemption order from CFIA as our caseworker, and mysteriously, about a week after, was early May, maybe in April. She said, all of a sudden, it disappeared. They revoked it. The ostriches, if everybody doesn't know, the ostriches have no category in the CFIA. They're not poultry. They have no status. The CFIA has no status of these birds. They were working on avian flu, the antibodies out of the eggs in the protein. And if you listen to some of the research they were going to come out with, Dave Walensky said they were working on issues that they could solve in poultry barns, where they could put antibodies in filters to draw that the barns draw in air, and they've had test results 98% effective of stopping avian flu.
Well, I number one, I appreciate you calling in, Paul. Clearly you followed this very closely, and I appreciate that because that helps us be educated on the topic. Number two, there's no question that this ostrich farm, Universal Ostrich Farm, had shifted its work. They were at one time an agricultural food supplier, but they've shifted their work now to science. And so it is talking about science and data that is culled from the tests that they do on the immunity system of the ostriches. There's some unique qualities about that. I've seen and read all of that information. It's taken on a life of its own in the fact that we're talking about it. We're talking about it here in Saskatchewan. Meanwhile, these types of culls are happening and have happened throughout Canada, with probably not even making a headline in a newspaper, or certainly not making a headline here. And it's taking on a bit of a life of its own. And it's where's the balance? What's the reasons? What's the priority? Why are people so up in arms about this? Because people are. There's no question. And what the CFIA is saying is they do have jurisdiction, because although those ostriches are not being used for food, if they detect the avian flu in a situation that it could compromise other poultry products in Canada, which are, I think I saw the number, $6.9 billion industry in Canada, that it could be critical to not only the food supply chain, but to obviously the economy and all the rest of it, which is where they step in and they make their decision. 1-877-332-8255. Yeah, the text line. People have to look at the big picture. Do we take the chance that they infect another bird that flies into the ostrich yard and then spreads the disease elsewhere? Not worth the risk. Hey, good text here, and thanks for the suggestion. We actually have reached out to try and grab someone from Vito to get them on. Text here suggesting Dr. Angela Rasmussen from Vito would be a great guest on this to talk a little bit about. Could be a voice of reason to help understand what the rules are, what the role of the CFIA are. Yeah, it's a big one, and of course, the Supreme Court. Now at the point where they might be weighing in on this as well. Okay, let's take our last break, and then we will come back and clean up what we can of open lines. We haven't even talked about the pipeline that Danielle Smith wants to get going yet as well. I know we've had a couple of texts on that and a few phone calls as well. So we'll take a break. We'll be right back here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I would be remiss if I didn't at least mention, of all of the texts that we're getting on the ostrich, and it's literally two piles. One pile saying, this is crazy. It's a cull. This is part of what we need to do to keep food and keep our country safe. Go ahead with it. And then others say, absolutely not. And here's the reasons why. There are a few people saying there's a conspiracy aspect to this. The government doesn't want to stop the avian flu, allowing for the control of food supply. There's too many unexplained fires in the food chain and the food supply chain. So I don't want those that are saying there's a conspiracy behind this saying, Evan, you purposefully didn't read our text. There's a few of them. Tom, Kevin, there's a number that came in there as well. Okay, I do want to go back to the phone line. We've still got a lot of callers on the line on a variety of topics, but I'm going to go to Corning, Saskatchewan. Les, you saw the announcement Danielle Smith made yesterday. Your thoughts on her wanting to basically incentivize the pipeline?
Well, I'm actually proud of her, Evan. She's pretty smart. She's calling out Mark Carney on this. That pipeline was approved before the line where it was going to go across what country and everything. And all they need to do is she needs to go back, pre-approve it through where it was going to be routed, which is a lot easier now. And that'll be the easy part. And now she's waiting to see what Mark Carney says. Because if Mark Carney says, nah, there's no call for this pipeline, not needed in Canada, well, there goes his call for energy superpower. And boy, this is going to drive Western independence just right through the roof, which Mark Carney doesn't want.
I was going to say, you're on to something there, because Danielle Smith yesterday, let's actually listen. This is the announcement that Danielle Smith made yesterday.
We are announcing that the government of Alberta will be the proponent of an oil pipeline to the Northwest BC coast, with the support and technical advice of three major pipeline companies, including Southbow, Enbridge, and Trans Mountain. Our government will make a formal application to the Federal Project Office under the Building Canada Act. Today, we are beginning the engagement process with Indigenous groups across Alberta and British Columbia to ensure that they can be part of this nation-building effort. That conversation must begin with Indigenous engagement, not as a checkbox, but as a foundation for relationship building, trust, and shared leadership. This will lay the groundwork for full and thorough consultation as this project meets regulatory milestones.
Okay, so that was the announcement that Danielle Smith makes yesterday. Basically, the Alberta government spending $14 million to get the ball rolling, to put this in front of the federal government as a possible next major project announcement, incentivizing investment by the private sector. But she did also go on to say that now the ball is in the prime minister's court.
But to realize this potential, the federal government must make meaningful and substantive reforms to Canada's regulatory environment to revive investor certainty. The simple fact is that you will not see companies sink billions of dollars into new major projects unless the federal government overturns or overhauls its Trudeau-era anti-resource development policies. And that includes the oil and gas emissions cap, which we know is a production cap, Bill C-69, the No More Pipelines Law, and the tanker ban, which have made investment in new oil and gas projects extremely difficult. And this is what we've heard from industry and potential investors. They will not invest in a new pipeline with these bad laws and regulations in place. You can't build a pipeline to the Northwest Coast and still have a tanker ban. You cannot have an emissions cap that is so aggressive that companies would have to shut in operations in order to achieve it. And you can't have enthusiasm to export natural gas and win the AI data war and then have punitive policies against using natural gas on Alberta's electricity grid. Now, I've made this case abundantly clear to the Prime Minister. And what I can tell you is this, that I am more optimistic now than I have ever been over that the concerns of Albertans are finally being heard.
That was Danielle Smith yesterday. So this will be interesting to watch play out to see what the federal government's response to this will be. She's saying the $14 million is just to spark it, just to get it going. I like the fact that we are seeing premiers, and we saw this with Premier Scott Moe as well, over the Chinese tariff issue. He took the bull by the horns and said, okay, here's what we're doing. We're going to China. Let's take someone with the federal government with us. In this case, Alberta wanting a pipeline, taking the bull by the horns, doing some things to incentivize that. There's a couple of people lurking in the shadows here wanting to basically squash this idea of the pipeline. Here's a big surprise. One of them is Heritage Minister Stephen Guibeau. Why is he even talking about this? He's the Heritage Minister. We do know that he's tried to designate new park spaces, basically trying to block the path of possible pipelines. So we've heard that. And BC Premier David Eby, I'm liking this guy less and less the more I see him in the news. He basically has a phone call with Danielle Smith before her news conference. She tells him what she's going to announce, and then he badmouths her and her idea after the press conference saying that she doesn't have a real project here. She doesn't have a private company to advance this. The chances of advancing this with private money, very, very small. So he's putting fires on the flames of the energy that she's trying to get going to get this pipeline going as well. Les, thank you for the call on that. All right. Sorry to the folks that we didn't get to. We had lots of great calls and texts today on Open Lines, as per usual, here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.